From Colorado Public Radio, it's Colorado Matters, and I'm Zachary Barr, in for Ryan Warner. Okay, so by now, you've likely heard about the fiscal cliff, that economy-crushing drop-off we're all going over if Congress can't strike a budget deal by the end of the year. Tax cuts expire, federal jobs cut, government programs axed. Scary stuff. But Scott Adler says you should not freak out. The political scientist from CU Boulder has written a new book, Congress and the Politics of Problem Solving. And in it, he argues that Congress works well under pressure and that it needs to manufacture crises such as the fiscal cliff in order to get its work done.
A lot of what Congress does is set on these recurring schedules. So, for example, the budget every year. It's several different appropriations bills. Those are supposed to be passed and need to be passed in order for Congress to operate from year to year. But everything else that Congress does, its defense budget, its budget for transportation, education programs, intelligence programs, Coast Guard, Securities and Exchange Commission, all of these things are set on these kinds of deadlines. So that if Congress doesn't get its work done, if Congress doesn't renew these programs, update them, they'll actually terminate. And that's what gets them to do the work each year, each few years on these programs.
You're saying that by creating a deadline, that drives policy. So if you have a large policy area that's been ignored for some time, the deadline puts it onto the table and forces us to talk about it.
That's exactly it. The deadline creates an agenda. So, for example, we see transportation programs, what's called the highway bill, is usually on about a six-year schedule. It takes the issue off of the agenda, off of Congress's plate for a number of years, meaning that they won't often make any changes to the program or the changes will be quite small. But it forces them to reconsider it at the expiration. It forces them to get the work done. It induces lawmakers to focus on that issue. But you look at problematic areas of federal legislation, immigration, energy, crime. A lot of these are not on these kinds of schedules where big programs terminate.
Okay, so it's one thing to get your homework done because you have to. But is there any evidence that these artificial deadlines produce good legislation, good policy?
Well, there are means of allowing for a little bit of experimentation. Instead of writing legislation in stone, instead of saying, well, this legislation is going to exist in perpetuity, they allow lawmakers to try things out for a set period of time. And it may be the case that what they've done is successful and they can continue those kinds of programs. But what it also does is lower the stakes in terms of coming to agreement between the different factions. Lawmakers are more willing to compromise when they know that there isn't a certain amount of permanence to the agreements that they come to.
But Scott, is this really the best way to run a government?
Well, it is the best way to run a government that has too much to do. What you really don't want to do is have everything up for grabs all at once. That's a problem because then stakeholders, the administration, interest groups, constituents, they're all going to be clamoring for Congress to do something on whatever issue is of importance to them at that given moment. Well, Congress can't handle all of these different demands from different constituency groups at once. It needs to be able to control that agenda, and it uses these expirations, it uses these deadlines as a means of controlling when it is they're going to consider specific issues. So in some ways, it has no choice. Because it has so much to do, it has to be able to structure its decision-making process, its problem-solving process, and it uses these deadlines in order to do that.
Has Congress been working in this manner, putting off the work until it has a deadline? Has it been working in this manner for a long time?
It has been a large part of how the federal government operates going back to the 1960s as government grew, as it took on more and more responsibilities. But the idea of having expirations actually goes back for centuries. In fact, it's written into the Constitution. Military appropriations are not supposed to go beyond 2 years. And in fact, we see the first piece of substantive legislation passed by Congress in 1789 had an expiration, and you can find these expirations all throughout American history.
Scott, there's a strong perception among the public that Congress is ineffective. But when I hear you talk, you sound like a booster, like a fan. Am I hearing that correctly?
In some ways, I guess I am. I see Congress within constraints trying to function as a governing institution, trying to solve problems. The electoral process doesn't work perfectly, but it does create incentives for lawmakers to invest in lawmaking, to invest in the process. Now, of course, there are other aspects of the political process that can get in the way, that can prevent lawmakers from reaching those compromises, and that's how we end up in the situation where we are currently.
And so this fiscal cliff business, the ultimate, biggest, baddest deadline of them all, it sounds like it excites you a little bit. It's an opportunity.
Oh, this is what lawmaking is about. This is the interesting stuff. It's the opportunity for lawmakers to sit down and hammer out a huge agreement here, something that deals with the budget for the long term, that's something that deals with taxation for the long term, that tackles the issue of debt. And this is where we see a real opportunity to move legislation forward, to find some interesting new avenues for both revenue and spending.
Scott, do you have confidence that Congress will avoid the cliff and work out a way forward?
Well, I have confidence that they will do something by the end of the year. Whether or not they're actually going to come up with the grand bargain is really the million-dollar question. The grand bargain, of course, would include budget cuts, would include some changes on taxation, would include even potentially another debt limit increase, which is coming up in January as well. So my hope is that they won't just simply kick the can down the road. They won't simply come to a short-term agreement and then wait for the new Congress in January or sometime next year to move a bigger package forward. But I can't say with full confidence that I'm sure that they're going to be able to work this out.
Scott, thanks so much for your time.
No problem. I appreciate you having me.
Scott Adler is a professor of political science at CU Boulder. His new book is called Congress and the Politics of Problem Solving. Well, all this talk about the fiscal cliff got us thinking. What does this cliff look like? So that's the question we put to three people, an economist, a rock climber, and a poet. Can you match each description with the person who said it? Here's the first one.
Some cliffs are hard to classify. This one rises to no clear pitch, all cloud and speciousness. Ironically, those who were closest to earth have farthest to fall, while those who were highest will only fall a little bit, no matter what they pay or say, into the blind abyss that awaits everyone, everywhere, after a crash like this.
Pretty clearly The Economist, right? Just kidding. That was Colorado Poet Laureate David Mason describing what he thinks about when he pictures the fiscal cliff. Okay, let's listen to the next person. Economist or rock climber?
The fiscal cliff is probably at the edge of a road that's made up of $100 bills. And we've got the federal government, along with the members of Congress, driving along this road. And as they drive along the road, they just sort of pick up these $100 bills whenever they think it's necessary. They're not looking ahead while they're doing this. They're just looking down, picking up $100 bills, assuming that this road goes on forever and the $100 bills continue forever. And unbeknownst to them, They're going to come to the end of the road, and that road will just fall down into this huge abyss.
That was economist Mac Klaus from the University of Denver. But rather poetic, don't you think? That leaves one more, the rock climber. I found one at an indoor climbing gym. Have you heard of the fiscal cliff?
No.
When you hear that phrase, fiscal cliff, what do you think that place looks like?
I imagine a giant rock cliff that's like a plateau and then a steep fall, and then there's some economic organization or maybe just a bunch of people with money falling off of that, possibly relating to the theoretical downturn of the economy. I don't know much about it all, though, so that's the image I get.
Rock climber Lance Herring of Boulder.